This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All this time, brother, everything you've done, everything you've said, I've heard all about. So you've made some remarks in the past about when is Papa Fritz going to be here. Papa Fritz is here.
Episode 51 from December 11th, 1982. And I'm joined by Kelly and Johnny. Kelly, how you doing, man?
Doing pretty good, brother.
Johnny, what's going on, my friend?
Just hot and tired, but I did two Grateful Dead shows, Dead and Company this weekend in Boulder. It was fantastic. So, feeling good.
Awesome, awesome, man. Speaking of feeling good, why don't we open up with you, Johnny? We open up with a King Kong Bundy interview. Tell us what's going on here, man.
Well, first of all, we have Bill Mercer, and someone isn't there. Mr. Jay Saldi, not there. They didn't say he was on assignment. Nothing. He's gone. And I went, last time we saw Jay Saldi, he was clearly expressing his displeasure with David Manning.
And I don't think this, he shows back up until like 87 or 88.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So all I can figure in my imagination running wild, just as I'm liking Jay finally, and now I think I hate Manning because I'm sure Manning heard about what he said. You know, that he should only be trying to manhandle the midgets and not be in there with, you know, doing his bullshit two shows in a row. I bet she went up to Fritz, say, Daddy, because you know he probably called him Daddy, you know, he can't say that about me, he's got to go, you know, and Fritz, they let him go, I guess, you know, that's the narrative that I created in my mind, and I'm going to stick with it, because fuck David Manning. But King Kong Bundy, wearing a very large Lacoste alligator shirt, so looking good, that's 1980, late 82, that's a fashionable man right there. And he's just cut a great promo on Kevin Von Erich, where he's nailing home that he's calling him a scrawny punk. Scrawny punk. So it was good. It was quick, good. But some of the stuff in the show, not so quick, not so good.
So, Kelly, did you even miss Saldi? Because I didn't. I mean, so Johnny's done almost a 360 on him. Or 180, I guess. What about you? I could care less that he's gone.
Yeah, me too. I mean, yeah, he was getting better. I mean, actually, bad Jay Saldi was maybe better because we got to make jokes about him.
Right.
When Jay, you know, actually started making sense, it was like, oh, well, now you're just boring. But yeah. Oh well, he's gone. Maybe this finally ends the rotating crew, and we have a consistent commentating. Well, it's not even a team anymore. It's just a one man group, and Bill Mercer has grown a beard.
He's starting to grow his beard with no mustache. It makes him look like a slave auctioneer from 1832.
yeah, that's
the old observers they'd call Noriega.
Noriega. I was gonna say just like an academic intellectual, like a beatnik look even randomly. But yeah, it's not bad. It's something.
What do you think of the interview?
Oh, yeah. It was nice. Bundy, he's been great on the stick all year. And him and Kevin going back for another round. I'm fine with that too.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, the guy, the believable promo, and you believe what he says. So he says, I'm going to kick your teeth in. You kind of, you know, yeah, he just might. Then we got the spoiler versus Jose Lothario. These guys have a history in Houston. I'm sure they've wrestled. You kind of tell here that they have some chemistry, and there's a little pep in the step. They don't do much, but they do have a little pep in the step. What do you think of the match there, Kelly?
Yeah, I was wondering if they had any matches on the Houston footage you guys watched.
We didn't see any, but I'm assuming they had one. I mean, both of them were mainstays, so I think God would work each other at some point.
Oh, I'm sure, and they probably had a feud with each other at some point, too. Yeah, they looked very familiar together. And my first note is David Manning signing autographs, though, before the match. Ugh.
Ugh.
I mean, if I couldn't hate the guy more, now he's doing this. Ugh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, eventually he becomes the number three babyface in the company behind the Von Erich boys and him.
Right. Oh, well, I think he's been there throughout 1982 at certain points. It's just
the babyface side has sucked. So, I mean, he's definitely above Al.
Wait, let's not get crazy. But no, you're right. I mean,
Al, he's above Al. He's above Jose on the.
What about Brian Adias?
He's definitely above Brian Adias. Yeah, we'll talk about that later. Saldi's disappeared, and so is the D and Brian Adidas.
One of the D's. He took the D with him.
to training camp.
We haven't seen Jose in a while, or it seems like it. And apparently he's a big fan of the Baltimore Colts. I didn't know this, but his tights, he has the horseshoe, white horseshoe on blue. So, that's good. They weren't a very good team at this time, but anyway, they had some glory years before that.
That could not possibly be why they're going when he's wearing those.
No, I know. I'm just joking. But you never know. But
wearing those things in the 70s, too, so I don't know.
Yeah, well, they were a good team, you know, Johnny Unitas and all those guys in the 60s.
I'm sure it has something to do more with being a Caballero or something like that.
Yeah, probably. So two legends going at it. Yeah, this is kind of cool. And I thought the match kind of reflected it. It was like two old fighters slugging it out, you know, mostly just punches for most of the match. And it was going all right. But then, oh, no, they're on the apron. Ugh. Oh, no. David Manning's counting. Oh, no. Fuck. Damn it. Stupid double count out on the apron finish that we've seen a billion times. Ugh. It ruined a perfectly good match.
And, you know, I'm with you. Their finishes are pretty fucking lackluster at times. But then again, it's the 80s wrestling on television. I've always been a big mark for Spoiler when he jumps off the ropes and uses them for leverage to come up with blows. I really like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you haven't watched as much Spoiler footage like Johnny and I did for the Houston stuff. But do you see a lot of Undertaker in them? Because he was like, he was the guy who like pretty much he was Undertaker's trainer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the rope work. Like, and as being a big man, it's unusual to use the ropes that way. So definitely, oh yeah, you can see, especially young Undertaker.
Yeah. Well, now John, what are you thinking of this match? I feel like okay. Not a few are gonna go on go take a left turn here.
Well, no, because everything Kelly said was fine. I'm just gonna. Talk about two things. One, we'll talk about the whole whether or not the Spoiler is a bad guy or a good guy thing. Bill Mercer tries to explain it and fails. Because first he says, he's back with Gary Hart. And apparently, oh, he is? Because they didn't make that clear. And he's saying he's back with Gary Hart because he started rule breaking in his last match. And that's all it means. That's all that it takes. He must be with Gary Hart, which is stupid. I'm like, what? They told the whole is he or isn't he angle in one match with over one match, though?
Apparently.
Fucking ugh. And then I just wrote, what a fucking awful finish. The crowd shit on the finish. And I know they've done this finish before, but get this one. They're brawling outside. I hear a voice say, it's. Because he counts to 10.
Yes.
I hear a voice say, it's supposed to be 20. And I thought it was someone in the crowd. And I rewound it, and it's the Spoiler. It's supposed to be 20, and he says, 20 on the floor, 10 now.
Which makes no
Pretty
sense.
Pretty on the floor. What the fuck? Okay, so this is botched because, okay, let's say that's true. Let's say that's the rule. So this is botched because David Anning, a referee, can communicate to the two guys out there that it's 10 on the apron. So because the crowd just died a death right after this, because what say what you will, the crowd, these crowds are hot now, and hotter and hotter. Crowd died a death. 20 on the floor. Fuck, I hate David Manning.
Then we get to ref for the
kid. Yeah, more Manning.
Yeah, can't get enough David Manning.
And, you know, they give us some work guys who are in the thing, but obviously Michael Hayes won the damn special ref. And then they kind of break it down where, you know, Noriega obviously doesn't understand how they assign refs in wrestling. Is there a poll for them and stuff? You go talk about this, John.
Okay. Ugh. Especially because David Manning takes the opportunity to do almost all the talking here, of course, because he's a star, don't you know? So we got Manning with Bronco and Bill Mercer. Number one, Bronco looks cool as fuck. Dig it. Yeah. Slick hair, pencil thin mustache. And it brings up that story that Foley told in his first book. That when he was down there, there was two things he brought up about why he didn't quite like Bronco. And you got to figure from the perspective of a young guy who's living his dream. Because one of them was like, he's the slowest ref ever. And I was like, well, he was 83 then, so give him a break. And the other one was, apparently backstage, they were talking. Foley mentioned that he had a college degree. And Bronco basically said, you have a degree? Why are you doing this shit? Which he took as an offense. And I get it, you're a young guy living your dream, and that's like, what the fuck? Looking back on that, Bronco Lubitsch, like a guy, old guy who's been in this business forever, going, you're smart and have a college degree, why are you doing this? It's a perfectly legitimate question to ask, to be perfectly honest. So anyway, so they're talking about how this whole fucking thing works with the fans picking the ref. And of course, I knew it. I fucking knew it. Alfred Neely. They bring up Alfred Neely, that NWA ref, they shit on him. So that was a whole part of this. He was part of this whole plan. Because then they said when they were looking to see who was going to be the referee or who the nominee's going to be or whatever, you know, the NWA brought up that Alfred Neely, and we put a stop to that right quick. Okay, I get it. It was quickly overruled. Then he explains that besides him and Bronco, we've got the other nominees are Ken Mantell.
Look out, look out, the Candy Man.
Wild Bill Curry. Duke Kilmuka?
Kiyomuka?
Is that what is it? Kiyomuka?
Yeah.
I've never heard of him.
He was a big star in the 50s and 60s. And,
okay.
Well, and in Texas quite a bit, too.
Okay.
Too,
yeah.
But it was definitely California.
And he says, and Michael Hayes, who he then includes, who has refereed before in Japan and another part of the country. Really? Uh-huh. Ugh. And he starts to say they put the names in the hat, and then he realized that – no, wait, shit. And then there was a poll. He stumbles over his words. But they keep hammering home. This way there's no impartiality. No impartiality. So then they ask Bronco, you know, so how do you think the match is going to go or some shit? Bronco says – well, you know, Kerry looks awful good. Kerry looks good. I'm like, oh, this is impartiality in action here. I see. Because, and Manning says, I got to go with Kerry. I got to go with Kerry. I'm like, you're potentially the referee. And you're saying, I think Kerry's going to win. What the fuck is this? Fuck this.
I'm with you, John. I was like, I could not believe that they'd book a segment like this. I mean, this has got to be a Fritz doing thing, really pushing it. I mean, I can't imagine Gary Hart thinking this is good business. So I'm going to...
Well, maybe the idea isn't bad, but are they just letting David Manning say what the fuck he wants?
Well, I mean, hell, Bronco said, I'm going to go with Kerry, too.
Bronco said, you know, Kerry's looking awful good.
Yeah.
Okay, that's okay. He's saying he's... Boy, he looked... That implies he's come off his injury. He's looking awful good. Manning flat out says, I got to go, Kerry.
But you lose the perspective because both of them now put over Kerry. Now,
of course, it's both. I mean, both is wrong, but I like Bronco. I'll forgive the old man, but fuck David Manning.
What about you, Kelly, with your head spinning? Like this segment seems like it belongs on WWE TV right now.
WWE would not convince. Number one, Vince wouldn't let the referees fucking talk, and if they did say anything like that, they'd be gone.
Good point. Okay. All right.
Yeah, it seems like Manning was there almost mostly to, like, explain everything. I don't think Mercer, and of course not Bronco, is capable of doing that.
What is Bronco's accent?
Where is he from? I want to say Polish.
I was thinking German, but okay. Polish, yeah. I can buy Polish.
I think it's Polish. I looked it up one time because I was curious as to his background. And yeah, he's from Eastern Europe, that's for sure. Okay. But that was cool. We've never seen Bronco talk before. And so that was something. He claims he's refereed 2 world title changes in the past. I'm not sure if that's true or not. He didn't explain or go into detail. I'm trying to think. Did he work other territories? Because I don't think any... So was there the change? Maybe he was there for...
Briscoe Race.
Yeah, that would be one. And maybe... I don't know. I couldn't think of... I don't think there was any in Dallas. So.
Wait a minute. I don't think...
You know, they've been around, so you never know. And you never know what they refer to as world titles also, you know.
Right, yeah. It was left pretty vague there. but, yeah, I mean, this is a key development, though, with Hayes being – well, it's not official yet. Did they say he won the ballot?
No, they did announce that. They said Hayes was the winner.
They buried it. All this bullshit, they go, oh, and by the way, you know, Michael Hayes won.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a little confusing. But anyway, this is an important plot twist or detail here for the future, with Michael Hayes being named the referee for the big Flair-Carry rematch in the cage.
Yeah, and it's clear we haven't had the Freebirds on TV in the last 2 or 3 weeks. So they're obviously finishing up business in the other territories at this point, right?
Yeah, I'm wondering. That's true. They have been off TV. Yeah.
So my guess is they're finishing up their whatever, wherever, other commitments.
Yeah, that must be it.
I just figured they were keeping them off TV for a reason, you know, because they tape these things 2 at a time. Well, maybe that's part of the reason.
It could be either thing. And they had to, you know, do jobs in Georgia or wherever the fuck they just came from.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
You know, they got to go pick up Buddy because his car broke down.
Then we get Interview City here, where we introduce all these 6-man lineups. Mm-hmm. Why don't you go one by one, John?
Okay, well, the first one, remind me, it's Al, Bugsy, and Diaz. And
yes.
Al, I think it's Al's, it might be Diaz, but he says, let me tell you something. 6-mans are going to be the number one thing around here. Mark my words. I was like, that's because you know what's coming up. You want to get in on a 6-man action.
Interrupt real quick. I mean, isn't that funny where these belts were meant nothing, but now next year it's going to be like, honestly, the focal point of the freaking company.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, I think Adia says, we formed an alliance. I'm like, yeah, a really, really shitty alliance is what you formed, you loser. And Bugsy was fine, but I was just like, and I like Al well enough. He's not good on the stick, but Adia just stinks. So
this got me thinking. They're listing out all the different teams that are going to be in the six-man tournament. And there's Hart's team and Devastation Incorporated and Bugsy and his alliance. Why the fuck did they decide that it's going to get down to Tom Steele and Mike and Ben Sharp? What? That's a million dollar question. What the fuck? I mean, I know I'm a spoiler alert, but I never really knew who the other teams were in this tournament. Yeah. I just remember that match. What the – why that? That seems so weird. We'll talk about that more in weeks to come. But
I think it wasn't a real tournament.
I was going to say, I don't think there was an actual tournament. Oh, it was just the finals.
Yeah.
Okay.
But even then, why it would have made a bit more sense to have them go against Kabuki Dragon and the Checkmate, an actual group of guys that have been around for a long time.
I think part of it is maybe they were going and were booked, and they obviously need to also fill out the Christmas show. So some of these acts had to be on the thing, too. And I also think some of these guys were in that section of they're going into new territories and stuff.
As far as the promos go, I don't even remember. I think Hart did Hart cut a promo with his guys. Yeah. I totally forgot.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, I didn't really write. His pretty short. He's kind of like Bundy's like Hart's basically saying either way I can't lose. I remember that. And that's that for the promos.
Yeah, what about you, Kelly? Any thoughts on these?
Well, the winning team gets one car to share between three people.
That's so cheap.
I guess in wrestling, you're traveling and you just need the one car,
Well, no, that's it. Guys travel together, Yeah, two car for you guys to do it.
Yeah, okay.
So it makes a bit of sense. And there's a money amount, too. I didn't note down how much money exactly they're getting. $10,000, maybe?
Yeah. I think, maybe that might be right.
It's a I know it's a check in a bag.
And that leads us into a six-man tag match with Kabuki Dragon, the Checkmate, versus Bugsy McGraw and his alliance. Oh, Kelly, other than the finish, I thought this thing sucked. What do you think, man?
Yeah, I didn't Kabuki really.
Kabuki seemed like he's working stiff as hell, but go on.
Yeah, I didn't really like it too much either. This is not a tournament match. But it's including two teams that will be in this.
Yeah, see, I assumed it was, because that would make sense.
No, because Mercer kept referring to the tournament as something that had yet or is yet to have started throughout the match, like the coming tournament. So no, this wasn't a tournament match. But you never know with this TV; it's very confusing. Brian Adidas is now Brian Adidas, and Bill Mercer still calls him Adidas for the first few minutes, and then figures it out, or someone tells him.
Yeah, then Fritz came down, was like, God damn it, it's Adidas now. You need the sneaker people off my ass.
What? Do you think it was really like a matter of a trademark thing? I don't know. It's strange.
Adidas was hot back in those early 80s, man.
Well, I know, but would they have really cared a wrestler was calling himself Brian Adidas?
In the 90s, so I wouldn't be surprised. When it's on national television and it's,
maybe.
I wouldn't doubt that Run DMC somehow watched a world class. So the shitty ass white boy wrestler was Brian Adidas, and they called Adidas and said, you need to put a stop to this.
Anyway, he's now Brian Adidas. Wow. Let's see. There wasn't much to the match. There was just no psychology at all. It was just a bunch of random back and forth spots. And yeah, crappy old Brian was, of course, fodder, as he always is. Takes the pin. That's just his role. It's just the job guy.
One thing you know also about this television, you were saying how confusing it is, Kelly, is most territories, the television built up for house shows. This doesn't seem like it builds up for fucking anything.
No, it doesn't.
No, it builds up to one match, basically, every time. It was, for a while there, it was Fritz versus Bundy. Or it's been Kerry versus Flair.
Yeah.
Or I mean, Kabuki more like sometimes.
A
that's
Nitro
it.
Or a Raw, honestly, these shows, than a traditional territory match.
I think
building
so.
Up for the house shows. Well, here it seems like you're trying to build up for the next television show, which I'm not sure.
Yeah. I mean, we're not. They edited out all the. I guess there would have been the hard sell promos that have been edited out for different house shows and stuff, right? But yeah, no, it's right. You're right.
I'm sure they're localized promos. They're not showing like Fort Worth, and we get there, you're gonna see some action. Yeah. They ain't showing that.
Yeah, I always forget. About that.
Yeah, they must be editing those out. Yeah.
Then we move into the...
Hold on.
Johnny has thoughts.
Oh, yeah, what's your take, John?
On the match, the match sucked, but just so much doing crowd work, because the match sucked. There's a woman in there with an iron-on T-shirt that says, "I'm not getting older, I'm getting better."
Yeah.
And I said, "Are you, ma'am? Are you? It's Saturday night and you're here." Every week we've been seeing them showing a shot of a couple of fellas. We saw Ebony and Ivory. We saw the two hillbillies. This week we saw two very, should I say, 1982 hillbilly metrosexual gentlemen. two fellers, you know? Two gay guys, let's just say it. You know, the little pencil-thin mustache, and the one guy was going, get him, go! And I was like, Fritz don't give a shit, because he's hitting every demographic. We're bringing in the chicks. We're about to bring in everybody. Constantly showing these shots. He's like, oh, they want to come down and see the guys wrestle in their underwear? Let's get them, too. Green is green. Money is money. And the crowd is wild for this. It's funny, you just said just a bunch of random spots with no psychology, and I'm just like, hey, it's the indies now.
Yeah,
okay, easy joke, don't. Okay, but they are wild for it. And Bill gets off the line. Adias is crawling to the corner. I guess he's in a hold of some sort, and he said Adias crabs his way to the corner. Crabs. He says that Bugsy is on a mission. I was like, Bugsy looks like he lives in a mission. Bugsy's getting a beatdown, and he's hulking up Bugsy style, you know, that ends with him spinning around in a circle. As he spins around in a circle ready to fight, he tags Adias and leaves. This sucks. Oh, terrible.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention one more thing from this match. Another bit of illogical WCCW is that
tag match, a regular tag match, warrants two referees,
but for some reason a six-man tag only one referee. That was a bit of a continuity problem. So.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place for Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceForNation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcasts, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talking Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Well, that leads us into the segment of the show. Fritz and Flair in two different studios. Fritz is Fritz and Flair is Flair in the corner. What do you make of this, John?
Okay, so this now means that either this show or the next show is the very first classic world class I ever saw when we first got world class championship wrestling on we had a new UHF station called Philly 57. And I immediately went to see what kind of wrestling is going to have. And it was world class followed by classic world class. And because the first thing I ever saw was this, was whatever show had this. So it's either this one or the next one, because they show it again. It's so funny because I'm like, I don't remember any of the other stuff, but I remember this. And they do this thing that they've done a lot when they're on location and Bill is talking to them from the studio or something. He always says this, Fritz, can you hear me? I can hear you, Bill. Yeah. Rick, can you hear me? Why? No. You don't. That's stupid. It's stupid.
Wouldn't
it's
you do
low.
That before you air it?
Exactly. Wouldn't you edit that out before you start it? You know, and you know he's not actually in another location. He's standing right the fuck there. You know, they don't have the money for that kind of shit. So you got – I remember seeing this back then. And the first thing I remember thinking, because I had never seen Ric Flair in early 80s or let's just face it, 70s Ric Flair. Right here, because he had the gold medallion.
Yeah.
That's yeah. The shirt's unbuttoned down, big flared collar, ugly fucking suit. But, you know, at the time it was super stylish.
Hey, I mean, I'll tell you, that suit, every like family reunion, every time I was dressed in one as a kid, and that picture fucking always pops up on fucking family reunion movie night.
Okay. But I remember thinking at the time, I was so used to seeing Ric Flair on Crockett TV. I just remember thinking, I'm like, God, he looked so much uglier back then.
Yeah.
I was like, his nose seems weird. Did he get work done? You know, his teeth seem more crooked.
More blade scars on his forehead.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah. You even see the Neosporin on the top.
Totally.
Oh boy. So let me see here. So Fritz is basically saying, right, you know, we got the proof, blah 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 blah. And Ric Flair didn't do it. And Ted DiBiase says he should have written a book about it like OJ did. When OJ wrote "If I Did It," because Flair basically goes, "Well, if I did do it," I'm not saying I did. He says, "Until I admit it, it didn't happen. I don't care what proof you have." And then Fritz's go-to insult is "moron."
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, Bill, I can't deal with a moron like that. A moron? any court in the U.S. would find this, you know, this evidence to be fair. Like any court in the U.S. would throw this out of court. He's screaming about his son, son Kerry should be champ. And Flair starts turning it up, and he's like, "Yeah, I wish I was in the studio with you, because assuming maybe I did it, you guys had a lot of nerve going around calling that punk the uncrowned champ." So he's giving his reason for the bounty, you know, because it's not just to take Kerry out. And he's like, "Fuck you and your uncrowned champ bullshit. I'm going to break his leg. I was leg broken." I'm like, "Yeah, I like that." And Fritz is like, "If I was there, you were here, I'd get you by the throat." And then he starts screaming, "Oh, let me get away from this moron, moron." And Flair turns it up. And he's trying to say, "Okay, you're bringing this on yourself. You put me in a cage. Someone's going to get hurt. And the only weapon you got there, Flair, is your big, massive tongue." "And my son, Kerry." And Fritz tries to get in the last word, and Flair ain't having it. And he's like, "Someone's gonna get hurt. I don't mind bleeding. You brought it on yourself. The consequences are on you." And Fritz is walking away. You just say like, "Blah, blah, moron." But it's awesome. This is fantastic stuff.
Totally agreed. But man, it makes Kerry look like a puss when your fucking father
sure does
is cutting your promos for you, because Kerry was incapable of doing the segment, obviously. There's no way Kerry could fire up. Can you imagine Kerry trying to fire up in this segment? Who had been Wrestle Terror, have been crap.
Wrestle crap.
Yeah. I mean, fucking horrible. I remember hearing like Meltzer used to talk about how when Bruiser Brody was the booker, how none of the damn baby faces could cut promos, and he'd have to be on air with them to cut their promos for him, and that's what essentially Fritz is doing right here. What'd you make of the segment, Kelly?
Well, I mean, Fritz was the longtime hero of the territory. He's respected. I think it's maybe a bit different. But yeah, I mean, no, Kerry couldn't go toe to toe with Ric Flair in a promo war.
Now, David could.
David could have for sure. Fritz he's been part of the story throughout too, you know. So I guess it makes sense that he's here, and he was good. I mean, he was a really good promo. And Flair, of course, is great. They're just screaming back and forth at each other, and yeah, Johnny mentioned how he's still wearing his late 70s best clothes here, and yeah, it's true, he does, he must have had some sort of work done to him by 85, because that forehead, he looks like King Curtis almost, or Abdullah the Butcher. It wasn't as bad 5 years later, or it didn't seem like it.
I was like, what, I'm 15 years old, and I'm used to TBS Saturday Night Ric Flair, and I suddenly see that.
The lighting, something was, it was horrible. I was thinking as I was watching, was this guy really that attractive to women? Seem like he's that attractive in that light. It was just a real bad look for the Nature Boy here. Fritz also, speaking of bad looks, his hair comb over, yeah. Whatever, comb down, I guess.
He comes it down with buttered toast.
Him and Arnold Scollin. Oh my god. But yeah, I mean, Fritz, this probably you know, helped draw some more people in. It was very personal. It was a family matter. And, you know, the fans in Dallas loved the Von Erich family. So it was, yeah, it worked in Dallas.
They didn't care who's going to win the title.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the territory. In Dallas, it all worked. It was, you know, you had the corrupt ref, but nobody cared.
Well, yeah.
Because you know what? This is the town that J.R. Ewing put on the map.
There you go. Because literally, I mean, I'm sure the fan base is getting excited, but as Pete's pointing out, this is literally like, yeah, the guy who's going to beat you up, his dad is telling us that he's going to win. Ugh. No,
it's no different than Jock Ewing used to cut promos.
There you go, Jock Ewing. Wow.
Bobby.
Great reference. Yeah, it shows you. It's just different, man. You're like, it's just a different wrestling. It's not, you couldn't do this today, but it worked at the time.
Oh, totally worked. And you know, that was clearly, Flair's suit was, an outfit was straight off the Joe Namath starter kit, you know. Oh, God. Unbelievable. A great segment, though. Then we get Kevin Von Erich, and he cuts a promo. And mm-hmm. I even thought his voice cracked at one point during the promo.
A little.
It wasn't terrible, but he was having some, you know, some Pete moments where he mumble mouths some stuff. What do you think about it, John?
I kind of liked it just for Kevin because he's pissed off. I like pissed off Kevin. He's like, you know, basically the gist of it is like, so you calling me a scrawny punk? Well, I don't think that's funny. You got a big mouth to go with that big belly, Bundy. And I was like, 1982 fat shaming. Nah, that's good. I like it. But I liked it. You know, it showed him he was pissed off and he's going to kick Bundy's ass. And, you know, he mumbled it over a little bit. But as far as Kevin Von Erich promos go, it's fine.
Yeah, I thought it was totally fine for a Kevin promo.
Yeah, no, it wasn't bad or anything. It was just, you know, it was just kind of there. And at least, yeah, it wasn't terrible Kevin promo. Now, at least this is the match of Kevin versus Bundy. What are you thinking here, Kelly?
Well, my first note is we're getting closer and closer to the big Star Wars Christmas show. And you can still notice quite a few empty seats in the sportatorium. So it's going to be interesting to see how quickly things change after the big angle on Christmas night, because it's still, I mean, the crowds are hotter, they're younger, but they're still not packing the sportatorium. So
how many of them showed up, you know, wait, Freebirds aren't here. You want to go somewhere else, honey?
Yeah, very possible. Because yeah, they were the hot act in town and now they've been away for a few weeks. Non-title match here. Kevin's the American champion, and Bundy was the previous champion. These guys have been going. Actually, it was Kevin who shaved Bundy's head way back when.
Yes.
So they've been feuding off.
And his eyebrows.
And his eyebrows, yeah. Just for good measure. Who knows what else got shaved?
That's how they ran this around the horn. They shaved his head in the Dallas market. In Fort Worth, they shaved his eyebrows.
In some
Corpus Christi, they shaved his balls right in the middle of the ring. There's taint, the front, everything. They ran this shaving all around the horn. Bill Mercer said
that's how you draw it out. Around the horn, that's great. Oh, my God. Bundy hits Kevin with a proto-avalanche in this. I don't think he's been using that at all. Of course, it'd be his finisher later. And Kevin pretty much no-sells it. It's got to... You know, we've seen Bundy slowly become...
He hasn't mastered it yet.
No, not by a long shot. We've seen Bundy, like, slowly become the Bundy that we all know and love over 1982, but there's still a few things missing, and the avalanche is one, but the other is those damn white boots that he's been wearing. For some reason, it bugs me. It's like, just go to black. Just finish it all off. Then you're the complete King Kong Bundy. But no, he's been hanging onto those damn white boots all year.
Boots are expensive, and he ain't making a lot of money in the fucking territory.
Apparently not. Yeah, this was a pretty solid match. It was stiff, heated. Then we get a big ref bump. Here's Manny again. I mean, he was all over the place in this episode.
Actually, in that small town, David Manning was the one who shaved his balls.
He probably requested. Yeah, that's how David rolls. But he took a huge bump over the top rope. And he probably had been practicing that one for weeks and then begging Fritz or Hart or whoever to finally unleash that massive bump on the world.
You know, Hart goes over Bundy, do it stiff.
Anyway, so that allows Bundy to get away with throwing Kevin over the top rope for which would have been a DQ, but Manning was out of it for a bit. And then Kevin gets pinned when he's back, which is a perfect finish because it's a non-title match, and we're going to set up presumably a title match, maybe even on the Christmas card. I'm not sure if that's on there or not. But yeah, that was a fine match.
What about you, John? What are your takes on this?
Oh, yeah. Well, when they're talking about the American title and why Fritz came out of retirement, Bill, he just flatly says, oh, he had to do it because Fritz wanted a Von Erich to hold it. Yeah, I know. Now, there might have been some empty seats here, but I wrote this down. And I was going to say, remember when we started doing this and this place was not even half full? Some of these shows, there was nobody there in the stands. And so it lends itself back to Pete's point he made in the last show. It's definitely the Freebirds. That's it. There's no other explanation. It's the one X factor is the Freebirds, and that's who's responsible. Mm-hmm. There's lots of parts to it. Of course, the Von Erichs are an integral part, but if it wasn't the Freebirds, it wouldn't work. So it's them. At one point, Mercer goes, hey, does he forget King Kong Bundy's name? He goes, the bald one. Jeez, you're not gonna miss Jay. I'm gonna miss Jay because Jay was annoying in a can you believe this is on television way. Bill Mercer just stinks. There's nothing enjoyable about him. The bald one. Are you pitching a new nickname or are you just fucking stuck? And then I'm like, babe, Bundy wins. Nice. A Von Erich visit. It's Kevin, because Kevin it's like the term yeah, it goes around like the curse of the good worker, you know, because Kevin can fucking work. He's stiff as fuck, you know, and maybe no sells a lot, but Kevin can fucking work. He can go out there and make anyone look good. And Bundy is learning, and he's quite good for his type of wrestling and character. But you need someone like Kevin Von Erich to make King Kong Bundy really look good and put on a great match with him. And I enjoyed the match. It was a... there was a lot of shit on this show. I liked this match a lot, though.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, too. Good big man, little man match. I mean, they definitely have its flaws, but it was entertaining. On a sad note, we lost Mr. Saito, I guess last night. So I always liked Mr. Saito as a wrestler. You know, he was an integral part of training people, and... was just a workhorse in a ring. Everything he did, he believed in. And, I mean, just so many good memories. I remember him in the WWF as, you know, tagging up with Mr. Fuji, having really good tag matches with Gurria and Martel. You know, you remember him in the AWA having good matches with Larry Zbysko. So many good ones in New Japan and All Japan. And, you know, just so many one-off stuff you saw, but that was always always a really good worker and a guy, an asset to the business. I mean, yeah, you always remember him in Patera, you know, closing down that McDonald's or opening the McDonald's. Mm-hmm.
Closing it.
Oh, yeah. They opened it all right. They opened the window with a fucking boulder. They opened it.
But, I mean, that's not what people should remember him for, because he brought more, a lot more to the business than being hungry in the middle of the night.
Hey, man. I like to think, Pete, I like to think that somewhere, like, I'm not a religious guy, but, you know, it's somewhere up there. You know, St. Peter's like, I don't know, you know, we got to check, you know, if we can let you in here. And Mr. Saito throws a fucking boulder through the goal, the pearl gate. That's right, the fucking, that's what I'd like to imagine.
Well, thank you, Kelly. Any thoughts on Mr. Saito's passing?
Yeah, I mean, for me, growing up, my only exposure to Saito was basically the history of the tag team title Coliseum on video, because he was no longer part of the WWF. He was, I guess he was probably in prison still when I started watching wrestling. And then he went back to Japan. And the AWA stuff I didn't see at the time when he came back. So, yeah. But I loved that tape, and I loved the matches that he was in. He had, you know, a very... Like, the contrast with him and Mr. Fuji, even as a young age watching this, it's very noticeable that he was the more serious one, the more dangerous-looking one of the two. You know, that came through. And then years later, getting to watch his greatest hits, there's been tons of highlights. I still haven't seen the famous... Well, I don't know if anybody's watched the whole thing where him and Inoki have a battle on an island or whatever for, like, 2 hours. You know, and then there was another match. This came up on PWO that I don't think I'd heard of, between him and Inoki, where they're handcuffed together in a ring with no ropes, and then they just, you know, beat the hell out of each other into bloody pulps. That sounds kind of cool. And I'm not an Inoki fan by any stretch, but I may have to look up that one and see if it's on YouTube later. And I've still never seen the ones he had with Larry Zbyszko. That I've heard so much about. Yeah, I've never seen those.
Yeah, early 90s. He also had a lot of good stuff on the AWA set that made the cut and stuff.
Yeah, I've seen some of that stuff over the years with him and Bockwinkel as a team. And there was some other good stuff, too. That's escaping my memory right now. But, yeah, I've always liked him. He was an Olympic athlete. He was very accomplished. He traveled all over the place. He was one of the guys who came to the States from Japan and stayed for most of the 70s and early 80s, you know.
On the Southern Independence.
Yeah.
They didn't have McDonald's in Japan.
No, it was a
double. He ate his first Big Mac and he's like, I'm staying here.
Yeah.
What do you want to? And obviously, we're not going to have Johnny use eulogy because he'll be making jokes on a guy.
No. I love Mr. Fucking. Hold on. I love Mr. Saito, and I just wanted to say, add this. What I also enjoyed a lot was, speaking of the team with Fuji, was right towards the end of our run on Titans of Wrestling, we watched a number of Fuji Saito matches, you guys, me and Parv, and I had a lot of fun with that. And you all who haven't heard that can listen to those at the PWO Place to Be Nation Network and the Titans of Wrestling.
There you go. Kelly.
Oh, yeah, and rest in peace, Mr. Saito.
Those tag matches with Martel and Gurria, and then more importantly, or more surprisingly, against the Strongbows, those were quite a revelation.
Yeah.
They were the only team that made the Strongbows look good.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, they were actually, like, great match. I thought the best two out of three falls match they had on TV for the held-up tag belts between Saito, Fuji, and the Strongbows was a legit great match. I thought that was awesome. Definitely go see those. The match where Martel gets blinded is legendary. The tag title switch.
Oh, that caused me to get sand thrown in my eyes by my best friend.
See, I mean, very influential. So those are anybody who hasn't seen those, go out of your way to see them.
All right. Anything you want to say? Anything you guys need to close up with before we head out?
Nope.
All right. Follow me at Titans of Wrestling. Have a great week. And, don't make buzzer noises and count to 10 and stuff when you're watching wrestling. Have a great week.
My heartaches and troubles are just up and gone. The moment that you come in view, and with your hand in mine, dear, I could dance on and on, and I could waltz across Texas with you. Waltz across Texas with you in my arms. Waltz across Texas with you. Like a storybook ending, I'm lost in your charms, and I could waltz across Texas with you.